Hello there, everybody. We are back for the next episode of Andor. Not Obi-Wan, but I decided to go with that intro anyway. And it's me. You'll be able to tell this is not Mike Burton, the usual voice of everything Star Wars and comics emotion, the walking encyclopedia of the Star Wars universe. I know online it's called the Wikipedia. I think we need to come up with some sort of name for Mike for his Star Wars knowledge and his expertise. I'm not sure we can call him the Mikepedia or something. There must be some Star Wars character called Mike out there or something related to Burton or what. I don't know. Well, I'll have a think about that for my next appearance in 2 weeks' time. So I'm going to lead on this episode, and I'm lucky enough to be joined by a new member of the Comics Emotion family, making only a second appearance. But the first one has already paved the way for what we can expect for every other appearance starting now. Math, great to have you, mate.
Thank you for having me. I just hope I can do it justice.
Definitely. So, your first appearance was a week or two ago on She-Hulk?
It was last Friday, I think it was, the She-Hulk episode 6.
Episode 6, yeah. So, was that a couple of weeks ago now, isn't it? Or just under two weeks based on where we're recording.
Yeah.
And, I mean this in the nicest possible way, your best is yet to come, because we all find our feet as we're going. It was about 18 months ago, probably, when I suddenly got invited into this world, and then you end up having your own two shows and then appearing on four other shows. And this is my third podcast now this week. And you get sucked into this world because it's just a really enjoyable place to be. And I hope you felt that way after your first appearance on She-Hulk.
It was a lot of fun. It was nerve-wracking at first. I thought, oh, am I going to clam up and I'm not going to be able to talk? But then if anything, I think I had to keep holding myself back a little bit.
Well, again, much like if you were here with Mike right now, with having Dan on that show with his knowledge of the Marvel comics.
Yeah, it's scary, isn't it?
Yeah, the stuff these guys know. And, everybody on that episode was bringing all their knowledge and their expertise of what they like and what they have experienced. But there's just a couple of members within our group who I'm sure you'll get to meet and you'll get to call at other points where it just kind of blows you away sometimes.
Yeah, I would say you think you know quite a lot, to be fair. And then you start talking to these guys and you think, I know nothing. Teach me.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. But then all we can do is keep learning from them. And then one day maybe, the apprentice will become the master, right?
Might take a while for that one. But yes.
So before we get into episode 4, what did you think of the 3-part premiere?
I watched the first one. And it was kind of late at night, and I thought, right, I'll watch this and see what it's like. Really enjoyed it, and then realised they'd actually released all 3. Mm. So I had to wait until the weekend to watch the other two, and I think the other two moulded really well together. I think all 3, you watched all 3 together, but it needed that. I think it really needed that to start paving the way for what's to come. And I think this is going to be very much a story-driven thing where it's not going to be action, action, action. It's going to be very much kind of, we're going to, kind of lay down what we want to do in the future. So, I think people have to be patient with it. And that, but I can see it being a really good series and hopefully tying in and, kind of sorting out little loose ends that, we've had. And plus, it's nice that it's not a Skywalker thing.
Mm. Yeah, I can't echo what you said enough. I think the key phrase is slow burn, isn't it? And you just need to get on board with it. I think those 3 episodes, you were absolutely right. They needed to be together. And I know you had a bit of a break, but still you watched them as like a collective ultimately.
Yeah.
And it felt like kind of a feature-length pilot, I think.
Yeah, I think, like I say, it needed that. And I think when it got to the end of the 3rd episode and that it left me happy with what I'd seen and really wanting more. But I think, I'm glad it's not a Netflix thing where it's just you can binge watch it, because sometimes I think that spoils it a bit. You get a bit bored. This is keeps you wanting something different each week. But I think, as I say, it kind of, I didn't really know much about it. I knew the character and that was it. Mm. And I thought, well, where are they going to go with this? Especially hearing there were 2 seasons that they were going to do. It's like, how can they do this? And I think so far, going back and seeing Rogue One, seeing what he turns into and seeing this person that you've got at the moment that, you know, you can see he's lost and that he's, you know, I mean, in episode one, I think it was where he killed the two guards, you know, the two security officers. You could see that really, it really told on him doing that. The first one was an accident, obviously. The second one, you could really see him struggling pulling that trigger, but knowing he doesn't have much of an option now. So, you know, as I say, we know where it's going to go. I think you both mentioned that it's sometimes hard knowing that a story, you know, certain characters are going to always survive. Like in, you mentioned Black Widow, you know Black Widow's going to live, you know, and that in this, you know, Andor, he's going to live. And that he's going to make it, well, he's going to live for so long anyway.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's not going to get killed in, you know, in a few episodes time, even though it's just episodes about him. But there's a driving force. There's a lot of characters there. We don't know what's going to happen.
Mm.
You know, we don't know where it's going to go with them. I think Lucan was quite an interesting character this week. We saw, you know, I'm sure we'll get into it, but we saw a lot more of who he is.
Mm.
And, you know, I think he's going to be a character that we should care about. There's a few characters that turn up in this episode that, you know, we all kind of do that point of, oh, we know who that is, you know. And, yeah, I think, although we do know what the story is going to end up being, it's nice to see how they're going to get there.
Mm, I agree. And I think 24 episodes, I agree with you, when this was announced, was like, whoa, that's a long time to spend with this quite small-scale Star Wars character. But I think what he does, and knowing what his ultimate journey is and where he's going to go, and now seeing where he started, is it's really doing what other shows or other parts of the Star Wars universe in live action haven't really done before, which is delve into that kind of ground level. That's why everyone loved Rogue One, wasn't it? It was the idea of like we're outside of the sphere of the Skywalkers, as you said, but also like the main arc. It is, of course, important, and it ties into it indelibly because they get the Death Star plans to pass on. But it's all those other parts of the galaxy, which, you know, if you read the comics or you read the extended universe books and all that stuff, that all exists. But if you're just watching the kind of central films and you're seeing what has become the spin-offs, and maybe if you're watching some of the animation, you're not really getting this kind of ground level, like kind of dirty gray line stuff as you were talking about. Because obviously you said in that first episode, he struggles to kill that guy. Mm. But we know come Rogue One in 5 years' time that he will shoot somebody on his own team in order to get away without even blinking an eye. So
yeah,
to see what that art's going to be and how he ends up going there is going to be fascinating.
It's also that thing of, you know, you take episode four, you know, so Star Wars, you know, episode four, we know there's a rebellion, you know, we know where that goes, but we don't know how the rebellion started. And I think this episode in particular, you see certain key characters appearing. So it's going to fill in a lot of the blanks that we've obviously, you know, we just kind of hand wave and go, oh, there's a rebellion, you know, but it's nice to see how that all starts. I know that, I don't want to tie too much to the MCU, but with a blip, it would be nice to see with a blip in the Marvel Universe of what happened. And that now, I don't think they're going to do a season-long thing of that, but it would be nice because that's affected a lot of people. You know, and like for this, it's nice to see where the rebellion came from. You can, there's obviously a lot of, you know, talk, and you can see that they're trying to set it up, but it'll be nice to go along that journey. And I think, you know, 24 episodes will probably do that, hopefully.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think, as you said, it's like a character piece, isn't it? But hearing Diego Luna talk about it as well, he's very open. He's like, calling it Andor is a little bit disingenuous. Actually, this should be probably called, this is not the words he said, but he said, like, calling it Andor doesn't seem right because actually it's not just about me. It's actually about, as you said, the birth of the rebellion. And it's going to do that stuff that Rogue One did so brilliantly. I am probably a bit less enamored with Rogue One than a lot of people. I do really like it. But from a storytelling perspective, I mentioned in the episode last week, I can feel the joins, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
But what it does do, as you just said, is not quite retcon, but fills in gaps where you could pick holes.
Yeah.
Such as, why is there an exhaust port on the Death Star where you can fire one bomb and it blows the whole thing up? So it does a really clever job, doesn't it, of writing around that. Another big potential plot hole is, how does this rebellion start, as you said, but particularly, how does it fund itself? Well, maybe we're going to find out over the next couple of episodes.
Sell a few of them pieces.
Yeah.
I mean, that is a thing, that there is so much behind the rebellion. I mean, even in, you know, going back to the previous episodes, with his name's gone now, the guy who kind of set up it all in motion, the officer.
Oh,
he got dismissed.
Cyril Khan, yeah.
What he did, realistically, we look at him and see the Empire, they're bad. But at this point, they're not the police force.
Yeah, the pre-war guys, right.
Yeah. You know, them two officers, although they did come out to pick a bit of a fight with him, but at the same point, they're kind of doing their job. You know, I mean, fair enough, there was picking on him, but at the same point, you could look behind it and the fact that, you know, they was doing the job, they were just checking up on him and seeing who he was. You know, we just automatically said they're the bad guys. Realistically, they're not. They're the police force, but we also know that there's the, you know, the CFR behind them as well. But realistically, they are just the police force. You know, what the rebels are doing, really, in a way, they're the bad guys. You mentioned it with the car bomb. You know, that was quite a bit of a thing for them to do. If it had exploded and that had been it, that would have been fine. The fact that they then chose to take them out as well, I think, you know, that's quite dark. You know, that realistically, they're not the good guys for doing that. You know, but obviously, you know, most people just see it as black and white, and we all know the Star Wars story. You know, the rebels are the good guys, and it's nice that you're seeing the darker side of how this has all started.
Definitely. It's operating in those worlds of grey, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's get into episode 4, which is entitled Aldhani, which, to jump right to the end of the episode, and then we'll come all the way back. This episode ended with Cassian being given some homework, or I should say Clem being given some homework, his adopted kind of mercenary name, as he's using here. And I felt a bit like that when the episode came to an end. I was like, I really enjoyed that, but there's so much in this, I feel like I'm going to have to go and Google now. We said, you know, we've got a lot to live up to with whose shoes we're filling and what he gets out of his guests. But I felt like this was one of those episodes, and you and I mentioned it off air just before we started recording, where on the surface, perhaps, it's a quiet episode. It's what I believe is called a table-setting episode, where pieces are moved into place, ready for the next big thing. But once you delve underneath that and you look at these kind of three different storylines that are going on, which I think we'll break down a little bit as we go. Each one is containing some important stuff, not just for this mini arc, because I believe, according to Mike, and I think now I'm getting that feeling, that each kind of three episodes is its own little mini arc, isn't it, to make up 12. And we may get like time jumps or planet jumps, or like they'll move on to like a different overall subject matter. There's quite a lot going on here that tells us a lot. And I think the same as Mike and I spoke about last week, tells us a lot about the characters that are in this world.
Yeah, I think the thing is, it's going to be so much character-driven, so much story-driven, this is. You know, so we've got to get, I mean, you know, I didn't write all the names down, but the group that he meets.
Yeah.
I didn't write the names down because I didn't think we'd have to.
No, it's fine.
No, more the case of, I mean, when the episode finished, I was a bit surprised that it was like, oh, is that it? We've got to wait till next week now. And then I can kind of see, you know, like you said, he's got his homework to do now. So it gives you time to kind of process what's actually gone on.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, I think them characters are going to be quite expendable.
Yes.
And that, you know, and just trying to work out where we are in the episode, but it was good to kind of see that, you know, he's gone in there. One thing, Clem, I did have to look this up. Apparently, that is his adopted father.
We found out was hung, didn't we?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that, so, because, I mean, when he came up and says, you know, what name is it going to be named? Straight away, Clem.
Mm.
And that. And so, again, it's just them little things that, you know, the Lena saw in, Lena a bit more background. So, again, you're caring a bit more. There's a lot more to the episode than, because, like I say, I watched it. And then afterwards, I thought, oh, I'm going to talk about this. And I don't, nothing happened. But then, as I say, I watched it again, got my notepad out, made a few notes, and just like lots of little things that you may not notice that, again, will tie in. There could be red herrings. There could be just stuff that, you know, mean nothing. I don't want to say too much, but like the Kyber crystal. Now, at first I thought, oh, could that mean that Lucan is maybe force sensitive? But there again, with the business that he's in, probably not. And that. But again, it's little Easter eggs. Now, like I say, there could be just Easter eggs there just for the fans to go, well, I know what that is. And that. But it is, again, going back and watching it, you just see so many little things that obviously, the you know, I don't know who's directing it now.
So this one was somebody called Susanna White.
Right.
So again, they're breaking down into three. So there was one director for the first three, and Susanna White is directing all of these next three episodes. Right. With Dan Gilroy is the writer, who's the brother of Tony Gilroy, who's show running. So Dan Gilroy of like Nightcrawler fame, the Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yes.
Yeah, the movie when he's like the ambulance chaser. Yeah. So he's in charge of these three episodes. So they've put these little teams together to do these little kind of mini arcs.
Well, they seem to know what they're on about. They seem to either the fans. It comes across. It does come across like there is fan written, and that, you know, with, as I say, a little Easter eggs, you know, little things in there that might mean nothing, and it might be just there for the fan service. But again, the story. I'm assuming they've probably, well, they've obviously written all these this first season. I'm assuming they've got something in line at least for the second season already, because it's going to have to tie up into where Rogue One starts. But yeah, I think you can see that they do care about this. It's not just a kind of, it's Star Wars, it'll sell. You know, I think Disney is a bit, sometimes they've done several series, and you do feel that they've just been rushed because it'll just sell. It's a character that people want, and that'll be it. This feels like they've actually given a bit more thought about it. And if you upset the Star Wars fan base, it could be very bad for them.
Yeah, so, it's true.
It shows that they do care about it.
I agree. And you look at the characters that have got shows so far. I mean, we put the Mandalorian aside. He now is his own entity, isn't he? Mm. He launched it as a brand new character in a new world. But what they've brought out since, obviously, Boba Fett and Obi-Wan has been very much trading upon previously existing kind of fan connections to characters. Andor is one who is probably got his own fans, and rightly so. As a character, he's good in Rogue One, and Diego Luna is a fantastic actor. But he's very much a side character. He's not a central figure. Not even in that film is he the main character.
No.
Jyn Erso is. So this is definitely a story that people are passionate to tell. I think what's fascinating is that obviously Tony Gilroy wasn't even the original showrunner. Something happened. I'm not sure how much is out there, but something happened behind the scenes during the pre-production. Nice. And he came in and they wanted somebody new, and he came in and did a pitch and got the job. But he also did exactly the same thing with Rogue One. He was the guy who was brought in to sort of polish and finish that off as well. So clearly he is invested in the character of Andor and his story.
Which, again, that's what fans want. They want someone who understands the character, who understands what we want, and not just give us lip service, actually give us, you know, what we do want to see. And again, fill in them blanks, fill in that stuff that lots of people kind of question, well, how did the rebellion start? You know, and like you said, to be fair, maybe calling it Andor is a bit of a thing where it's a bit misgiving of what it actually is going to be. You just think, oh, we're just going to... Because, like I say, when I first heard about it, I thought, how are they going to just follow this one guy? And that it's not going to work. And there's not enough there to kind of get him to where he's going to go. But they're not doing that. There's so much more. I mean, even in this episode, I think he's only in it probably 50%. A big part of it is actually Lucan is one of the main parts of it more than all else. You know, and again, he's they're fitting all these cogs together to show us, you know, where it's going to go, how to build this machine up into, you know, where we're going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the fan service stuff they're doing in this show feels, I don't want to say throwaway because it's not throwaway, but it's dropped lines. So this episode we had like, blah, 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 Scarif. And everyone's like, ooh, Scarif, that's where this is going to go down in Rogue One and Andor's going to lose his life. I get it. There's an obvious one for everyone to get. But then reading stuff online, some of the things that are being referenced, I mean, in like the art gallery, we'll jump all over the place. We'll get into the storylines in a minute. But in the art gallery, Mike's
sitting there going, what they're doing.
I know, yeah. I'll get a message at some point, I'm sure. So when Mon Mothma goes to visit, it's Rael, isn't it? Like, is that his name? I think goes to visit Rael in the art gallery.
Yes. Don't know, because we...
Luthen Rael, yeah. So when she goes to visit him, all the stuff like in around the gallery is all these references to the animated shows and live action. There's Mandalorian armor in there, and there's the part of, I can't even think what it's called anymore, but at the end of Rebels, spoilers for the end of Rebels, if anybody hasn't watched that, there's like I think it's got like the World Bridge or something like that. There's part of that there, and there's all these different like touchstones from all the different shows, including things from like computer games and...
Yeah, there's some from the latest game that they did, the Fallout.
Right, see, I'm not a gamer, so I don't know. That, and that stuff is lost to me unless it's somebody puts it online for me.
Where the coins were, there were certain markings on the stones at the back, and they're the skill tree from the computer game.
Okay, nice.
I can't remember what the computer game is now. is it Fallen Order?
So it is fan-servicing. It is Easter eggs, as you called it, but it's not like... It's not forcing a character into a show because they know they're going to get a big tick from the fan base that are watching it.
Yeah.
It's neat little moments for people to pick up on if they're paying attention to dialogue or if they're paying attention to things that are in the background in the set design. I like the way they've handled it so far. They've kept everything at the foreground of the show about the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's another one that they mentioned, is it Min Ban? Now that's from Solo. There's the War of Minban. You know, I mean, he obviously did this big bravado of 2 years of the setup, and Luke and Terman says, no, you did 6 months and you were a cook.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great moment.
But again, it was a little time back just to kind of put all the universe together. I mean, obviously, going forward with the Star Wars stuff, I do hope that they explore other storylines, maybe move away either forwards or backwards in the years from this, but it's nice that they are trying to tie everything together, which again, it comes down to the, obviously there is a fan there who's kind of, you know, piecing it all together to say, well, this is where it needs to go. This is what we need to kind of add in there just to fill in the blanks. You know, the fan base has been doing it in the past, and there's a lot of, you know, fiction out there that the fan base have done themselves. And, you know, they're kind of just trying to tie it in together.
I think what has been good about the Disney era so far, I mean, for all the criticisms we can make, and I'm sure, you know, a lot of those are valid, is that they have managed to start melding the worlds and putting through all the right stuff. So getting the animated characters into live action in the right way, cast with the right people and doing the right things and feeling like those characters are true. Bringing in people from Legends. So bringing in Thrawn into the Rebels cartoon and the way that they used him. And it sounds like perhaps he's going to appear in live action at some point as well. Maybe in the Ahsoka show. So I think they've been excellent at that, because there was a moment in this episode which drew me back to an old Legends book, actually. When Mon Mothma first goes back to her apartment, I don't know what to call it, her swish pad with her husband. And just before they get into the debate over the dinner table, she walks in and there was this like big tree on a table.
Yeah.
And my brain instantly jumped to an old Legends book. I had to research it today because it was there in the back of my mind. But an old Legends book by Timothy Zahn called The Last Command. And just for all you timeline fans out there, it's 9ABY. But this is a Legends book rather than, it's not canon anymore, unfortunately. But in this book, for this is the third part of the trilogy, basically. So for three kind of stories, the New Republic has been wondering how the remnants of the Empire have been finding out information. And it turns out, like, within these trees, there's been these old, like, what's it called? These old, like, I can't think what the word would be. These, like monitoring sources. These old, like, what is it called when you're, like,
networking.
Yeah, yeah. But it's got, like, they've got, like, microphones, or it's got, like, some, like, special way within these trees. And it's sending signals back to, like, an Empire relay base.
Right.
So, again, they probably didn't mean that. Maybe they didn't. It's going to turn out to be something, and I've totally spoiled that for everyone. But that's where my brain instantly went. Because, as you said, there is this tangled web of kind of Star Wars canon and Legends universe where we all bring our own little bits to it. And I read those books when I was a teenager, and it's still there somewhere in the back of the mind. And I was like, oh, but because it was Mon Mothma, right? Because she was a key figure in those books, and now they're using her in the show. That's where my mind went. So there is plenty of ways they can take this and plenty of source material to draw upon.
Oh, was it this 40 plus years of kind of where they, you know, and again, although the main timeline of the movies, there is so much more there, you know, that, you know, I remember when I first kind of got into Star Wars being young, and then years later when the episode 1, 2, and 3 came out, and I thought, oh, I know about Star Wars, and I was telling one of my friends, they says, have you read the books? I went, no. Mm-hmm. It's like, let me show you. And he just had like a library full of stuff, and it's like, where has all this been? And it, you know, there is so much there. There's more than just, as I say, this, you know, Skywalker kind of saga. You know, there is so much more, and it's, this is nice, because although that's out there at the moment, it's nothing really to do with this, and we're seeing a different side of everything. I think they do mention, again, all over the place, but Mon Mothma mentions that there is another person she wants to bring in. Now, my first thought was Leia.
Or the Organas, yeah, absolutely.
Because, well, I thought Leia at first, but kind of looking into it, I think she would have been about 15 or 16. So she's probably too young, but Organa, that would kind of work, because, you know, we know that they're going to be in it at some point. So maybe that's, you know, cause again, we know Leia, you know, but we don't know all the backstory of that.
Mm-hmm.
So that might be what, you know, propelled her into doing. I mean, you know, from the Obi-Wan show, you can kind of see she was going to do this anyway. But maybe having her family behind her, this is where it propels her to be.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, you're right. It was my first thought as well. Like, okay, this will be the entrance to the Organas in the show as well later on down the line. Okay, before we get any further, let's talk about kind of what I think is a triple focus of the episode. Let's see if you agree. You have the kind of Cassian stroke Clem now storyline, where we pick up immediately, don't we, with them having escaped Ferrix and they're going through Lightspeed on their way to wherever they're going.
Yeah.
And Cassian has this really interesting backwards and forwards. We've spoken about some of it, about the war and they have a intellectual kind of debate, which ends up with Cassian kind of agreeing that he's going to follow Rael down this path, follow him down this path, mm-hmm. of seeing where it's going to take him. Mostly because he offers him 200,000 credits if he gets through the job alive. And then, as you said, he then meets these kind of team of, I guess we're going to call them rebels, who are posing as like sheep farmers or something in essentially the Scottish Highlands on this planet called Aldhani, which I believe is a new planet that's been invented.
Right.
And that's kind of his arc in this episode. It's quite quiet, as you said. It's a lot of talking, it's a lot of debating. It's a lot of character building, really, as he has lots of backwards and forwards of lots of different types of people. And we get to see how actually he has this innate skill of how to deal with all these people. So not to win them over necessarily, but to
get the trust that he's going to do the job that they want to do.
Yeah.
I mean, you can see when Lucan offers him the 200,000 credits and that, you can see that he's obviously interested in that, and he needs the money. But they also kind of mention the fact that you're going to end up fighting this anyway, so why not do this with us? And there's a look in his face of, you're right, but I don't want to be eager. Because he doesn't trust any of them yet either. You know, he's just met up, you know, and he's looking for a sister, but he's been on his own for so long, really. I know he's got his, well, there was his adoptive mother, and that, but you know, he's used to just being just him, so kind of, you know, working with everybody else is a little bit, oh, I don't know about this, but the money's going to come in handy. But again, there's a look in his eye when they mention about, you know, you're going to end up fighting these anyway, so why not do it with us? Of, yeah, you're right, you know, let's see where this leads.
I like the listing. I mean, I haven't noted them all down. He sort of listed all these different factions, didn't he, of rebellion groups. Obviously, one that stood out was the Partisan Front, because that's the one that's led by Saw Gerrera, who we met in Rogue One, who is also going to appear in this show at some point too. So that's the one that stood out. But I mean, I'm assuming all these other names have cropped up in other parts of Star Wars lore before as well. I thought that conversation between the two of them was excellent, because they both had understandable world views, but it also allows Stellan Skarsgård, who I think was a little bit overshadowed in the first three episodes by some of the other performances. I think that conversation and then some later moments with Mon Mothma and with Vel, actually when they first get to Aldhani, I thought it started to give him the chance to shine in his role as the character a bit more. The way he asserted himself and the way that he convinced Cassian, I think, in that scene was an excellent bit of acting.
Well, it's same as with Fel. When, I mean, he said to Cassian, he says, you're going to see us argue, but, you know, don't worry, just wait there. And you could see him kind of, you know, disgusted, and she wasn't happy about it. And he turned. And
there was a moment he was like, listen to me.
But he kind of backed up with, this is what you're going to have to do as well. And you see further in the episode, she's not quite as strong, but she does do that. She does do that because obviously when she goes back to the group and that, and they're like, well, we don't want this guy. You know, it's 3 days before. We can't. And she kind of realised that she has to do that as well. And that it was some very good acting by him. You know, he comes with, like, we saw quite a few sides of him. Because, you know, you do see this kind of back and forwards between him and Cassian. And then you see this argument. But then you see later on when he drops his disguise, or probably puts on his disguise. Because, you know, that persona is more on for sure, whereas this, you know, who we're actually seeing most of the time is actually who he wants to be. But, I mean, you know, once you put the wig on, you put the rings on, and then he does this kind of pose and this smile. You can see that he's done it. And he's kind of happy how he's done it, but then he looks disgusted straight afterwards.
Yeah.
I've got to do this again. And we see it further into the episode when he goes into the back room on Mothra.
Mm.
The fact that, you know, as he kind of walks around, that, you know, that mask drops very quickly, and you can see he's more comfortable being who he actually wants to be and trying to sort this out. But obviously, you know, I think that we only saw a bit of Mon Mothma, and that obviously she's going to be a lot more further down the line. You know, I'm assuming we'll see a lot more of her probably in the back end, or maybe even season two. And that, I mean, I'm not sure whether they'll use her a lot in this first season, and that because she's got to be so careful with what she's doing. Obviously, at some point she's discovered, and you know, she is then just with the rebels. But I think, you know, these first few episodes, it'll be very probably brief. She'll pop in and out, I think.
Mm.
And that, even though she's like such a big character, you know. I'm sure once everyone kind of, and obviously we'd seen her in the trailer, but I'm sure when everyone's sort of like, oh, she's here now, she's going to be the driving force. But again, it's so early on. I can't see that they'd use her too much because, you know, if she just kind of comes up and starts, you know, losing the rebellion straight away, you know, they don't have any funding. They don't have, you know, what they actually need. You know, they have to kind of use her briefly, I think.
Mm. No, I think that's fair. I think that's a good shout. I was just going to say that Skarsgård, you're right. It's like a transformative performance, isn't it? He like literally shows different facets of his character. Mm-hmm. Through his vocal performance, his body language, he's putting on a costume, as you said, putting on almost like a Lando-esque purple cape with a flourish to finish off this wonderful moment. And I love that you pulled out that moment when they go into the back room at the gallery, because you're right, it's like flick of a switch. He completely changes back into the rebellion guy, which I thought was wonderful. I think, I'm trying to think of the timelines, and yeah, I'm not as much of an expert on it, but at some point within this show, whether it's season one or season two, because this is 5 BBY, and I believe season two is going to jump forward 4 years and it's going to be starting off like 1 BBY. And then, as you said, across the 12 episodes build up. So essentially episode 12 will finish and Rogue One will start, I think is the goal. And I think at some point across that timeline, the Senate gets dissolved, doesn't it? Because in Star Wars Episode 4, one of the Imperials mentions, I'm sure, to Tarkin, or even Tarkin himself says, and that, you know, the Emperor's finally done away with the Senate. It's completely gone now. So you're right. At some point, Mon Mothma's either going to get discovered or she's going to leave. But it's going to be, I think she's going to be around for as long as she can be to try and have that voice within what is left of the Senate up until the Emperor manages to dissolve it.
Yeah. Which, I mean, maybe, again, my Star Wars encyclopedia is not quite the same as what some people's are. But if maybe it is the case, if it just gets dissolved and then she can fall back and then fund the rebels that way without being outed. And I mean, a husband I don't know much about. I didn't know much about him, but he just seemed a bit of a, what's the word? He seemed to be quite, he showed himself as this big brash person, but then obviously it comes across that she wears the pants in the kind of relationship.
Yeah.
You know, and he's just a bit more like a playboy. And that. So,
I think he's an old war hero, isn't he? And essentially he's been left behind, hasn't he, by her success in the Senate. So
yeah,
I was definitely getting the impression that he is unhappy being, in his eyes, not my eyes as a viewer, in his eyes as a character, emasculated by his powerful wife.
Mm.
I think that was the impression I was given by that, because he's put her in a very uncomfortable situation in this dinner party by inviting guests who have political, who are in political opposition to her, who have opposed, who have opposed, like, when she's tried to get things passed through the Senate, they've opposed it.
She said they're already just backstabber, you know, so... She doesn't want to have a dinner party with these people.
Mm.
And he's just, it's like he's been poking the stick a little bit, doesn't he?
Definitely.
Just because, well, I can do this because I want to do it.
Mm. So this is the second strand of the story, isn't it? It's interesting that we've naturally gone there. And I think for me personally, this strand of the story for this episode holds more interest than Cassie and Clem's.
Yeah.
Which, you know, we all criticized years and years ago, Rogue One, for starting with the commentary about politics and about trading and the Federation, and thinking back to the opening school of Phantom Menace was, you know, like the Trade Federation are blocking. We literally have that comment being made in this episode, but I was all for it. I found it really, I think, as you said, seeing the political intrigue in this episode was actually really interesting. And we know ultimately this is kind of a spy series, right? So her doing these dealings from behind the scenes, I think, is going to add a lot of kind of tension and interest.
Yeah. It is, like you say, it is a spy series. It is, you know, we know where it's going to build up to. Sorry, I lost my train of thought there.
It's all about characters, and even as we'll get into in a minute with the Empire characters, with the ISB characters, it's all about characters doing things covertly, I think is the word I'm searching for. Like, yeah. Cassian has got multiple levels of covertness going on. While Mothra is being covert, Luthen Rael is being covert. But even the new character we get to meet this episode, we get to meet Deirdre Miro, who I think was really nicely played by Denise Goff, the actress. So the like blonde-haired ISB.
Yes.
She's doing things covertly, or I think they're certainly hinting she's going to do things covertly. It looks like perhaps she's going to bring Cyril Khan out of his enforced retirement, because they've both got this personal vendetta against Cassian. So it looks like perhaps they'll team up, but she'll clearly be doing that against her superiors' backs or for her own benefit. Also, I think we're getting this world where everyone's operating in these covert ways for their own agendas, which is going to be really fascinating to see how it all tallies up at the end.
Yeah, I mean, the Cyril, I was a bit disappointed that we didn't really get much. Hopefully he's going to be in it a bit more. Because I'd be disappointed if they kind of just drop him there. Because you could see that there was an anger towards Cassian. You know, he made it quite personal as it went along. Mm-hmm. Especially getting tied up and what have you. But she could you know, go back to bring him out of retirement and say, look, I need you to do this. I need you to be, you know, like an opposite of Cassian, so that, you know, you've got two kind of spies that are going against each other.
I completely agree. I think that's exactly what's going to happen. I think she's going to have to hold up the front within the ISB. And he'll be the guy on the ground doing the wet work, the data work for her, because they're both. Yeah. She's personally offended by the fact that Cassian stole the whatchamacallit, the MacGuffin of episodes 1, 2, and 3.
I think part of that is because when Cassian just said that, you know, how he got it, that he just walked in there and took it
under her nose, right?
Yeah, she obviously realised. He just walked in here and got this. And that's quite a bit of a cut. Mm-hmm. The fact that he was able to do that on her watch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I don't remember what the other person that she argued with.
Blevin.
Yeah.
Supervisor Blevin, yeah.
When she kind of said, you know, it's my jurisdiction, I can take this. He didn't want to give it. You can see that they are very rigid. In there, that neither wants to give way to the other one, you know, and he kind of says, you know, don't look down.
Absolutely, yeah.
And that it was very much kind of, well, you're not having this, this is mine, you know. And again, they are very, very much kind of, this is how we're going to, which I feel sorry for Cyril, because Cyril did what he'd been trained to do.
Mm-hmm.
Two guys have been killed. He had to find that out. And unfortunately, it all went a bit tits up. And, you know, but his superior is doing the same thing. it's gone wrong. You've gone, and I'm dealing with it. And he wasn't happy there was a cover up there.
No, there's plenty of commentary, isn't there, on bureaucracy and on how the senior members within the groups, so within the pre-war groups, you had that commander last week, you sound like, make up some kind of story, don't worry about it. And then this week, you've got the character of, desperately trying to think what his name was, Major Partags, I think is his name.
Yeah.
So the main kind of ISB guy. He was similarly kind of saying in the final scene between these guys, between Blevin and between Miro, kind of saying like, oh, look, it was just, they got that, they got away with it. Don't worry about it. We're moving on. We're doing something else. So this sense of like, we're not going to sweat the small stuff. And Miro's already putting it together. She's like, but this has happened there and that's happened over here. And I feel like this is all going to join together. She can sense the rebellion coming, whereas those senior to her are more interested in their own advancement or keeping their position or ticking the right box to impress somebody. So there's definitely there's that subtextual commentary of the kind of bureaucracy of government or corporations or whoever it is it's choosing to focus on at any given time.
Yeah, you can see they are very much kind of rigid in what they're going to do. They follow a line and that's it, which I suppose the only way they can climb that ladder is to follow that line very rigid and to know that they won't stray from what them above them want them to do, which, again, we know, from the outside that there is the Sith kind of running everything. They won't stand for anyone just to kind of go off on their own. They don't want that. You have to follow, follow the master and that. So it is very, very rigid and you can see that from them. It's not up for discussion.
No.
Because I think he says, what's our reason for being here? And she kind of read it out and he says, yes, that's what the book says, but that's not what we're here for.
Yeah.
We're here to deal with the sickness.
Mm.
And obviously, once the rebels are the sickness and that's what they're trying to deal out with. But again, there was another fellow that he was making notes. And he told him, he says, you stop doing that now, because obviously we're doing something wrong. He didn't do to what he wanted, and he passed his job on to someone else.
Mm.
There's that look of, what did I do wrong? You didn't live up to what you were meant to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're no good, we move on to someone else. And he's very, very rigid in what they've got to do.
Yeah, we know blind obedience of an authority figure is never a good thing. That's been historically proven. I looked up the ISB because I thought they've been around in Star Wars for a long time, but they've never been like a main focus. So I thought I'd have a little look at them as an entity or what they exist as. Because did you watch the Star Wars Rebels cartoon?
I've seen bits of it, yes.
So there was a character called Kallus in that. He looked a bit like Wolverine with like big lamb chop sideburns.
Yes, yeah.
So he was part of one of the ISB branches. So I looked it up just out of interest to see what it is. And it does sound like it's a very kind of complicated system they've got going. So they've got six branches. It sounds very 1984 Big Brother, because we have the surveillance, the interrogation, the re-education, the enforcement, the investigation, and the internal affairs branches of the ISB. So I guess they're kind of if the Primor, as you said, were like the hired police force, if you like, then you've got the ISP, which are the next step up towards becoming like full empire, becoming full, like imperial, imperial people that we know. Yeah. And I think one of the characters in this scene, as you were talking about when they're around the table, is a character that appeared in A New Hope. Now, what I haven't done, unfortunately, is noted down the name. But I'm sure when Mike comes on next week, he'll be able to fill that gap in. But one of them is...
Mike can probably list them all.
Absolutely. So the ISB have been around for a long time. They've been around since the start. Nice. It's one of those things which kind of has been seeded and is growing and growing and growing within the universe, which I think is really interesting. But those branches and the names of them have been very deliberately picked, right?
Mm-hmm.
we're clearly looking at this kind of Orwellian authority figure, which we should in no way trust.
No, no. Yeah, because that never ends well.
It definitely does not. And what we have beautifully done as well, of course, in just naturally talking, is we've talked about the third strand of this episode, which is looking at kind of the ISB and the Empire and the internal workings of that at this stage of Star Wars history.
Which, again, it comes back to when you're watching the episode to start with, you think, nothing's happened there, but there is so much that has gone on, which, again, further down the line, people may then realise, hang on, that was in episode 4. Oh, that's where that comes from. That, and then, again, it's a great way of telling the story. People complain when we watch movies that the book's always better. And that with this series, I do feel that it's like they're reading the book to you. And sometimes there are some of them pages where you think, oh, it's going on a bit, but it all ties in, and it's all to tell you that big story to make sense of everything. And this wasn't like a filler episode. This was a laying the land down of what we need to know, and it will all come into play further down the line.
Definitely. I mean, the Blevin and Miro antagonistic relationship is going to be important later on. We're going to see, assumedly we're going to see Miro actually rise through the ranks and be successful, probably due to her connection with Khan. We've got, we don't know who's going to survive out of what I'm going to call the red shirts of the team of rebels who are on Aldhani. We'll see. Obviously, we know partly that's going to be successful, or at least Andor is going to get away. I'm going to assume maybe Vel will escape as well, and they are going to get away with the money. Perhaps this is the start of the funding for the rebellion. I agree with you. It's all groundwork. It's all going to become important later on. I think. See, go on.
Them stealing the money. I mean, as I say earlier on, where the episode finished, the fact that it was just like, this is your homework, because the next episode is going to be this. I actually thought, oh, they were going to do this kind of heist. And, that's what I mean, that the episode went really fast. And I thought, oh, it's kind of ended now, but I want more. Now, I think them stealing the money will come, that they do need that. But I don't think it's so much. If they was to get blown up, and that's still a massive din, to affect the Empire, because they've just lost that money.
Yeah.
Now, there are some interesting things there. There's a Jedi temple there, and that the meteor shower that's, we're going to see, it's going to look quite nice in the next couple of episodes, I'm pretty sure, this heist that they're going to do. But it is, again, that they're showing that there's a lot more to the story than just, just what we kind of see on the surface. There's a lot going on in the background.
And it's everyone that's been affected as well, because they have that nice little line in this one about how the people that are going to come for the celebration of the, not meteor shower, but as they call it, meteor shower, that's dwindled over time because they've forced all these people out of their communities. So again, this is another spark of the rebellion, isn't it? Seeing like these small victories against the Empire are what help all these different planets and different groups of people spark up and decide to fight back.
It shows that they can do this. And it's a group of seven of them now.
Seven now with Cassian, isn't it? Yeah. And the guy who's like undercover within the group.
So if a group of seven of them can go and do this, then it shows to the rest of the people that they can make a difference. I mean, the mentioned...
That's like Rogue One, yeah?
Yeah.
10 men, we can make 10 men stand for more. And yeah, all those themes. And the fact in Rogue One, they just walk into that Scarif facility as well. We are getting all these echoes. Sorry, go on.
Yeah, I mean, she mentioned that the people who live there have all been shifted down south. They've all had to move. But I don't know if she said south or north now.
No, she did say south. You're right. Yeah.
Yeah. So they've all had to move, everything that they had, because, the Empire have turned up and they've taken over. And this little victory, whether it's successful or not, will show these people that, hang on, we can make a difference. We can come back. We can go back to doing what we want to do. You know, we can bring the numbers back and we can, you know, have our enjoyment every 3 years of this, you know, this light show. And maybe even more. Maybe this is where it's, again, it's laying them little seeds for it to grow into the rebellion.
Definitely. What did you think of the location shooting for this episode? I believe it was filmed up in Scotland.
Yeah. It was really nice. I mean, this film, I wouldn't really recommend it for the film itself, called The Northman.
With Alexander Skarsgård.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. It's not bad. It looks brilliant, the film does. I think a lot of that were done in Norway, to be fair. But I think they did do some stuff in Scotland. They've spent some money on the season. Mm-hmm. And it looks good. It looks, you know, you can see where these farmers were living. You can see, you know, I mean, even just the little, you know, like wooden tents that that was left over. Obviously, she had a little area where she was storing food and water. But they've obviously, you know, picked where they want to be to kind of fit. And it looks really nice.
It feels something to pick up on. You said there, it feels lived in and real, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Which that original trilogy did. Like, no, the Falcon was dirty and had grease stains and it was run down and wires were hanging and it felt like that was a real place.
Yeah.
And this has that feel again. I mean, I loved The Mandalorian. I thought it's a brilliant show. I thought two seasons of excellence. And I think this technology they invented, the volume, as they call it, this kind of 3D environment of green screen is an amazing bit of tech. But there's nothing quite like having your characters been out on location to add that sense of kind of dirt under their fingernails reality. And this show's bringing that for me.
I mean, that shows a good contrast as well between, you know, when you see them all sat on the table, they're all white suits. They're looking, you know.
Oh, the ISB guys.
Yeah. You know, you can see it's clean, it's spotless, you know. Mon Mothma as well, where she's living, it's very clean, it's spotless. You see where these guys are, you know, sleeping against a rock, you know, in this little hovel that they're having to sleep in. It gives it that grittiness and that it kind of shows up more realism, the fact that these are what they're having to do. And that. And again, I think if this had been just set in the studio, I mean, if I find out it is in the studio now, it's stupid. But it does give it that gritty edge, you know.
It does.
They do look, you know, the Millennium Falcon wouldn't look good if it had all been, you know, nice and clean. You know, Han Solo's not that kind of person.
No,
you know,
I agree.
The Rebels aren't that kind of group. They are very much, we will do what we have to do to kind of get the job done.
And they've been embedded there for 5 months, haven't they, this group? And it feels like you can tell. You can tell in the condition of their clothes and the camp. As you're saying, it all feels very real. I picked up on that too. I thought the juxtaposition in the hard cuts between the rebels on Aldhani, and I appreciate what you said about Mon Mothma actually, but particularly with the ISB guys in their like pristine white corridors, and as you said, in their white uniforms, and I thought that was really well done. And giving the rebels that link to kind of nature and the natural order of things and how the galaxy should be. Was the Empire this kind of enforced rigidity, as you said, and bureaucracy and rule following. And I thought the set design and the location shooting and the production design of the things that they built, I thought wonderfully told that story, wonderfully showed that story without anybody having to tell us that through a line of dialogue. I thought it was brilliant.
I mean, it's as well, there were a nice callback to when the guy turned up on the speed bike.
Oh, yes, I loved it.
And it just gives you flashbacks of, you know, like Leia being on one of the speed bikes and that, you know, whether that's, you know, they did that for a bit of an Easter egg kind of thing, but the backdrop was just like being...
Math, I can't say, my heart swelled 3, 10 sizes, whatever it is in The Grinch. Absolutely. When I heard that sound effect,
You knew what were coming.
Oh, it just made me so happy. I'm with you all the way.
Yeah, it's just, you just say, oh, I know what that is. Oh, yeah. And again, it's just little things, little callbacks that people are really going to pick up on and go, you know, again, you've thought about this.
Mm.
You know, that's how it would be. I mean, it, the same as when Cassian and Fel was walking up, and all of a sudden Cassian kind of stops, turns around, and he's like, get down. And you heard the TIE fighters coming in.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
You know, that again, that noise, Star Wars has a thing with certain noises you hear, and you can just hear a little bit of it, know what it is straight away. And it just, you know, I mean, I'm at the age where it does, it kind of tugs in your heartstrings a little bit of, I know what this is, you know, and I grew up with this.
Mm.
And it kind of takes you back to your childhood and that of hearing these things. And it's great, the fact, you know, I mean, Star Wars came out a year before I was born. But as I say, I've brought up along the lines with this stuff. And it's nice that, you know, 40-odd years later, it can still be like, it can send you back to your childhood of things that, you know, sitting there watching it, you know, with your parents and that, it was so good. And it's nice that they can have that where, like you say, you hear something, you think, I know what this is. And then you just get very excited for it.
Definitely. Ben Burtt was, absolute master when he was working on that original trilogy, and that scene in Jedi is still one of the best things that's ever been in Star Wars, and was the best toy. I don't know if you ever had the speeder bike toy.
Yeah,
you can press the button. It's all right. Yeah. It was bloody brilliant, wasn't it? It was so good. All right, I think we've come to a natural place. That's where the episode ends, right? Have you got any predictions? Let's say, particularly for the next two episodes, because if this is a mini arc, what do you think is going to happen? And then further forward into the rest of the season, what do you think we're going to see?
It's hard to tell because there is so many blanks there where it can go. If it is set in three parts, I wonder whether will they do next episode the heist and maybe kind of end it there, and then the third episode them trying to get away.
Mm-hmm.
And that, because I mean, it does mention the fact that, you know, the TIE fighters are going to be on a straight away, and they said you've got 9 minutes. You know, it is a very, you know, and it says the ship doesn't move very fast at all. So, you know, this is a case of I wonder whether we'll finish the second episode, them finishing the heist, and then the third episode them trying to get away.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe going wrong. Like I say, I'm not sure whether the money will be very handy for them, but I'm not sure if that's the main part. I think it's more the case of taking it away from them, showing mm-hmm. that they can do something, even if it's just a small victory. You know, going forward, I'm just not really sure, because as I said, there's such a big gap to see where it can go forward. It's nice to see Cassian kind of building into the role that we know he's going to be. His sisters, I'm assuming at some point, will come into it further down the line. But again, like we said earlier, he was a side character.
Mm-hmm.
So they could go absolutely anywhere with this guy, to be fair.
Mm.
I find it hard to kind of say where it's going to be after four episodes.
No, I hear you, because I think this show has the scope to go anywhere and we don't really know. I do wonder if next week may be a short episode. We maybe get one of those half an hour ones where it ends and then the heist will be episode 6. Obviously, I don't know. I've got no insider knowledge, but I think a lot of these shows have had these kind of short, tight ones, haven't they? Mm. And then saved it for and if that's kind of the end of an arc, that would make sense to me. Something just popped into my head then as you were talking. I wonder if we've met Cassian's sister already. I wonder if Miro might turn out to be his sister.
Mm. I mean, it's a spanner in the works. But you see, that could go one of two ways. One, is she looking out for her brother, or is she against him because she got left? He did tell her to stay. He did tell her to, well, we assume that's what he said. But she got left behind. So, you know, could she have turned quite bitter about being left behind?
But she's also very young, so does she even remember if she's been taken by the Empire and kind of brainwashed by the ISB into being this officer?
Mm.
It might be a nice little twist, and we know Star Wars likes to show us these kind of polar opposites, these kind of like forces of light and forces of dark, and how, but this would offer a new grey area where it's nature nurture, and the fact that he was brought up a different way to how she was and what that might mean. And if they,
because we don't really know what happened after he left. We know that they said I think they mentioned that his planet was toxic.
And they also mentioned that they also mentioned that it was, who did they say? They said it was going to be, I think that's what even said, like, when the Republic gets here, which was a line which really threw me. And I realized after talking to Mike last week, I was like, oh, we didn't talk about that. I swear I heard Fiona Shaw's character, his adopted mother, say, when the Republic gets here. And I thought that was an interesting moment. And I think, but what I've seen since is the sense that perhaps she's misunderstood the symbol that was on the ship that crashed, and that actually it was a separatist ship, or what's going to become the separatist movement, which obviously are then linked to the Empire and the...
I mean, we see this like yellow on their faces. Now, maybe that is that ship the thing that polluted the planet?
Yeah.
You know, maybe that's what's happened.
And we also know the Empire likes to strip planets of their resources, be it people or whatever it is they need to take from there.
But yeah, it's an interesting one, because we just, you just don't know. you know, you just don't know where, and it will be quite interesting if they do kind of, if that is his sister, and that, and then again, could that give him another reason why he hates the Empire so much?
Yeah, maybe, maybe, you know,
or you know, they've turned his sister against him. So it's an interesting one. I didn't think of that one.
Neither did I. Until literally, I mean, I'm going to give you the credit. You incepted it into my head as you were talking. But we will find out, and perhaps I can tempt you. I know we discussed originally you were going to appear on an episode later down the line. So perhaps if you're still invested and you're still interested, perhaps I can tempt you back for one of the later episodes.
Yeah,
we can see if it is comes true.
As I say, watching the episode the other day, I kind of thought, I don't know what we're going to talk about. And, you know, there is so much more. And, you know, we're going to be, I think, episode 8 or something like that was going to cover, which, you know, at that point we should have a good idea where we're going, hopefully.
And like I say, come back on and we'll find out if any of our predictions come true.
Yeah.
Great. Fantastic, mate. I've really enjoyed this.
Thank you.
So second appearance, first of many, I'm sure, to come. Have you got any social media handles you want to put out there? Or?
No, I don't.
No,
I'm not quite at that stage of doing podcasts and things like that.
Fair enough.
I'm an old man. I have kind of Facebook. I do have Twitter, but I don't really use it much. I pester people on the Discord more than anything else.
That's it. That's the best place to be. That's a very safe little niche part of the internet where we're all happy and support each other and geek out.
Yeah.
Wonderful, mate. Well, thank you again for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Mike will be with you next week to discuss episode 5, and then I'll be back for episode 6, and so on and so forth. We'll seesaw backwards and forwards between each other until we get to episode 10, when I believe he and I will wrap up so we can sort of rejoin forces and see if it pulls together. Episode 10 of the Andor breakdown show, but obviously episode 12 of the actual Andor show, so our forces will join together to see what we think from start to finish. All right, thanks everybody for listening. Make sure you tune in for Mike next week. Take care.